Chapter 33, An Age Day to Remember. The songbirds heralded the morning, though what portent their songs held was beyond understanding for the waking travelers. Neither Brannis nor Soria, Thomas, Abile, even erudite Rakashi held any knowledge of bird omens. There had been a finality about their battle with Lady Skald's mercenaries that gave the group a sense of ease in the aftermath. It was a road-weary, blood-spattered, aching sort of ease, but an ease nonetheless. Abile had awakened feeling much improved. She was still light-shy, but did not need to keep her eyes wrapped. She borrowed Soria's cloak instead to keep off the glint of the dawn light. "Happy Age Day, Brannis," Soria greeted him when he first woke. "You're an old man now." She gave him a playful smile and ruffled his hair.
"For a whole 2 days I share an age with you," Brannis retorted, ducking away from her.
"Congratulations," Thomas said. He came across their little camp to clap Brannis on the back.
"How old would that make you?"
23 summers ago I was born," Brannis replied.
"And in another world."
23? By thunder, I thought you'd had a year or two on me. And I'll be seeing my 30th year soon, thanks to you and your friends."
Brannis scratched his head. "Thanks," he replied, unsure how to take the dubious assessment of his age.
"Well, all the more life ahead of you, you know," Thomas said with a wink.
Separated from the threat of imminent death, the man was irrepressible. Abile gave him a quieter congratulations just before they broke camp for the day, and thanked him for her rescue twice over. The only one to say nothing about it was Rakashi. Brannis realized that he had never spoken much with Rakashi when matters were less than urgent. In Scar Harbor, he had gone about his business while Brannis and Soria had met with Lord Harwick day after day. When they traveled by boat, he kept himself apart either by choice or because of the fawning affection of Tikalish travelers, who rarely saw warrior scholars.
"Well, I'll find a time to talk with you, in private. We have some things that can be worked out between us, now that there is no one's life dangling by our delay."
With no road or map to guide them, they set their course by sun and shadow, plodding north. Soria hung back with Brannis, and gave him a full accounting of the meeting she had had with Iliardra. She left out no detail. She told Brannis where to find the Immortal's Enclave, and the secrets that Iliardra had bade her to keep. She even told him about the gate between worlds that the Immortals guarded, and the price they were willing to pay to stop him using it.
"What made you decide to tell me all this?" Brannis asked.
"Eyes open. I don't trust Iliardra," Soria replied. "She's manipulating me to manipulate you. She already made one false move by handing you the clues to Rashan's immortality. She made another by thinking she could convince me to hide this all from you."
"I don't see myself turning into another Talax. I can't say I'm even sure I want to destroy Rashan. He's unstable, I agree, but I think if I can overmaster him, I can keep him in check. I think we can partner to help rebuild the Empire, to sniff out the remaining necromancers and eliminate them. If he doesn't make the first move, I don't see why I would fight him. I blamed him for Irdan's death, but I think I misplaced that blame. Rashan is a murderous warmonger, too careless with lives, but Iridan's death was not his doing. I could have saved Iridan myself. Iliardra implied as much."
"Don't rule out having to hunt him down like a rabid wolf," Soria cautioned. "You seem to have more confidence in him than anyone, even those who have known him 100 winters.
"That's just it, though. I think I might understand him better than them. I think he looks at me as a friend."
The late afternoon had shown them a rock-strewn stream, clear enough to drink from and deep enough for bathing. They made an early camp in a clearing a few minutes' walk distant, as the ground near the banks was too uneven for the horses or for sleeping. They had pilfered salted meats from the keep, and Brannis suggested a fire. The men gathered firewood and kindling, and Soria took Abile up to the stream to bathe and wash out their clothes. Though he had no axe, Brannis was able to chop all the firewood they could ever need with avalanche. Thomas was even found to be useful at tending a fire, a feat most rough-raised boys can manage by the age of 7, but encouraging nonetheless.
The sun was growing low in the sky, threatening to dip below the mountains that Brannis could only think to name storm spires by their Vaedran counterparts, before Soria returned with Abelay. Soria carried her armor, having changed into spare clothes. Abelay's outfit clung to her, still not yet dried from washing. Both wore their hair plastered against their heads, still dripping.
"Saved some for us, I hope?" Soria called out by way of greeting.
"Just finished your share," Brannis joked. "But you can have some of mine if you like."
"I think I will," Soria replied. "You boys go ahead on up to the stream. You smell like a slaughterhouse, all blood and horse sweat."
Brannis followed Rakashi along the makeshift trail that Soria had found for them, Thomas in tow. The Takalish warrior had eaten little and said less since they had made camp. Brannis meant to put an end to the latter once they were well alone, and Thomas did not count as company. The trail was root-gnarled and rocky with little hollows filled with leaves that threatened to twist their ankles if they grew careless. Their path grew steep in places, prompting Brannis to grasp at saplings to keep his balance. Ahead of him, Rakashi seemed to have no trouble about the terrain, but he turned back often to make sure that Thomas was keeping up. They heard the stream before they reached it. The gentle gargle of the rushing water never seemed to vary as they approached.
"It must have played the same song for 100 summers, or 1,000, or even longer."
Brannis found himself contemplating the timelessness of things in nature, and could only guess that Kairos was at work in his thoughts. When they reached the stream, Brannis heard a low whistle from behind him. He turned to see Thomas gazing in open awe at the sight.
"We don't grow them like this at home," Thomas said.
Brannis could see what he meant. The rock-lined rush of water was a work of divine artistry. Boulders within the water's flow caused swirls and eddies, and the rocks themselves glistened smooth with untold ages of polishing. The evening sun shone down between a break in the mountain range, casting the surface in reds and oranges, and shadows from the rocks. There was even a small waterfall, where a sudden shift in the stream bed's height caused a cascade of water to pool in the basin before it continued along its flow. That pool was the ideal place for bathing, and the fresh wet trails leading from it told that the womenfolk had decided much the same. Thomas headed immediately for it and began stripping off his clothes. Brannis and Rakashi stood, not watching, but keeping one another in view, waiting.
"You going to wash up?" Brannis asked.
"Yes," Rakashi replied, but did not move.
"Go on ahead. I will keep guard."
"I think I'll just wait," Brannis replied. He turned and gave Rakashi a steady gaze.
"We need to talk."
"We do," Rakashi agreed. "I believe you have figured something out. You waited until the Akkardians were safe, but you had your suspicions before."
Brannis had to unclench his jaw to ask the question.
"Why?"
"Why what?" Rakashi asked. A taunting note in his tone told Brannis he already knew.
"Why did you kill Iridan?"
Brannis's hand went for the hilt of Avalanche. Rakashi was faster. He hopped and kicked out, catching Brannis in the middle of his chest. The armor took most of the blow, and Brannis outweighed the smaller Rakashi by a half dozen gallons. Rakashi used the kick to buy himself a few paces space as he flew back. It was enough time to have his half-spear free of its sheath before Brannis could reach him.
"So you admit it," Brannis demanded, panting.
All the time he had spent with Soria and her friends, and Iridan's killer was among them.
"Yes," Rakashi answered, speaking with his blade poised between himself and Brannis.
Brannis rushed at Rakashi, heedless of the deadly warrior's prowess, trusting in Liad's armor to protect him. Rakashi turned and ran, scrambling over the rocks along the stream bank. Brannis swatted at him with Avalanche, but could not get him within reach. He lost his footing in the process, more intent on his opponent than on the uneven terrain and loose stones. Avalanche sent up a spray of broken rock as he sprawled. Rakashi's half-spear stabbed into his shoulder as the Takalish warrior perched on a looming rock, but Brannis's armor shrugged off the blow. He took care with Avalanche as he regained his feet, then took a slash through the rock Rakashi had staked out as the high ground. Rakashi had already moved, though,
and Brennus's frustration was played out against a victim whose strategic importance had vanished. Brennus saw him standing a few paces on the far side of the boulder.
"One of us is going to cause Soria tears tonight, I think," Rakashi observed.
"You bastard," Brennus swore, and picked his way through the rubble to close the distance to Rakashi, though not so heedlessly as before.
Rakashi had a fist-sized rock in hand. He hurled it at Brennus as he approached. Brennus brought up an arm and warded it away.
"We're throwing rocks now," Brennus scoffed.
"Fine."
Brennus sent Avalanche on a sweeping arc through the stony stream bank. Rakashi ducked and turned away from the spray of rocks. Brennus noticed tiny flashes where they struck.
"A shielding spell? Since when did you know how to cast those?"
"I always have. It is not enough to stop your blade, but it is useful."
Brennus rushed forward a few steps. Rakashi hopped back an equal distance.
"You wanted this fight. You goaded me. Now you run?" Brennus asked.
The reasoning part of his brain was struggling to make itself heard.
"He must have arranged this. I did not surprise him. He wanted me away from Soria to keep her out of it. He must have a plan."
"Run! I face a foe with magic the likes of which this world should never have seen. I am 10 times the warrior you are. You wish me to fight your fight?"
Brennus chased Rakashi downstream. Several times he had the Tikalish warrior scholar so close he could brush his war braids with Avalanche, but Rakashi had Brennus's range well puzzled out.
"What is he hoping to accomplish? Is there a trap laid somewhere along here? When would he have laid it? I cannot fathom that he has arranged allies ahead. Soria claimed he was with Juliana on the other side."
It struck Brennus at the same time as it did the rocky shore. Brennus tripped on a rock he had not seen, as the twilight was robbing him of the ability to see his footing.
Darkness.
Brennus stood up, knowing that his time as hunter was drawing to a close. Rakashi's patched eye saw ether. It might not have been daylight, but Brennus's armor would shine like a beacon, as would Avalanche. Bereft of ether vision, Brennus would be relying on moonlight soon.
"Clever trap," Brennus said.
"Clever weapon you have. Let us call them even," Rakashi replied.
Brennus noted that he was no longer running.
Rakashi thrust his half-spear at him. Brennus had enough light still that he could see his way to parry.
He expected to find Rakashi's weapon torn from his hands, but the subtle angle of its attack kept Avalanche from sweeping the blade clear. Instead, Rakashi's attack veered suddenly, glancing off Avalanche's unstoppable blade and driving into his stomach. By the time Brennus reversed his swing, Rakashi had already pulled his blade back. Brennus tried wider, sweeping parries that cut a swath in the air before him, hoping that any contact would either disarm Rakashi or sunder his blade from the force. Rakashi, for his part, kept his attacks to feints, forcing Brennus to react, but pulling short of each monstrous parry. When Brennus decided to ignore a feint and lunge, Rakashi scored a solid strike, square in the front of his breastplate. The Tikalish warrior used the half-spear as a lever to propel himself back and out of reach. Quick stepping away, ever sure of his footing in a way Brennus could not hope to be. He slipped once more, falling to his hands and knees. Rakashi's half-spear rang against his helm before he could swat at the pesky fighter and chase him back. Brennus was breathing hard. He could hear Rakashi as well. He had little hope that he would run Rakashi out of breath long enough to get away, or take advantage of slower feet to land even a glancing blow.
One mistake. He only has one to give.
Brennus knew he had to come up with something different. Rakashi had figured him out already. That much was clear. The stream bank had a clear view of the crescent moon, giving Brennus all the light he had to work with. But it gave Rakashi uneven footing to use as obstacles. Brennus was the prey now. He fled for the forest. Rakashi struck at his legs, but his armor persisted in turning the blows aside, and Rakashi was unable to trip him up. Brennus gained the tree line and found himself in a deeper darkness, but surrounded by obstacles that would hinder Rakashi as well, along with enough dry brush and fallen leaves to track his foe by sound. Rakashi followed him in, stabbing at the back of his armor. Brennus could feel the blows,
but none harmed him.
Brannis whirled and tried to catch Rakashi off guard with the Tikalish warrior's momentum still toward Brannis.
He caught air instead of a Tikalishman, with a stray tree as collateral damage. Brannis ducked and raised an arm to ward off the falling trunk, unable to see which way it was falling. The only thing he felt was a slash to his arm.
"Why?" Brannis asked between breaths. "Why are you doing this? You could have lied. You could have made an excuse."
"I detest lying," Rakashi answered. "But not all truths need to be spoken. You have a right to vengeance, even if I was a soldier, acting on orders in a war."
"Right," Brannis replied. "It just happened to be you. Did you trick Soria into telling you how to fight Iridan?"
"Yes," Rakashi admitted. "Just as I tricked you into attacking me, so I did not have to break my word to her. I like you, Brannis, but I need to kill you."
"Why?"
Brannis asked again.
"Maybe I can reason with him. Maybe I can delay him long enough for Soria to hear that falling tree and come to see what happened."
"You must know this. Rashan forces my hand. I kill you to save my people. That is the price he demands."
"What? No!"
"Yes," Rakashi insisted. "Your life or all of Safshan. Even on the chance he is lying, I have to try. But he is the one who truly wants you dead, not I."
Brannis growled and rushed Rakashi once more. He heard by voice where he was, and had caught a bit of silhouette to confirm. That was all he needed, and Brannis was off at a run. Rakashi dodged between trees and bolted for the stream once more. Brannis was once more the pursuer. He plowed trees out of his way with Avalanche, trying anything to gain ground on the fleeter fighter. But Rakashi beat him to the stream. Brannis was close behind, edging for the one step that would put Avalanche within reach of the traitor. Rakashi made to cross the stream, leaping from rock to rock in full stride. Brannis followed on his heels. Brannis slipped. He did not fall immediately, but caught his balance awkwardly on the last rock of the crossing, flailing his arms to keep from plunging into the water. Rakashi noticed this and halted his flight. The Tikalish warrior spun, half-spear gripped by the end in one hand, swinging it about in a great arc.
Brannis heard a grating metallic sound, but felt nothing.
He regained his balance and stepped across to the far bank. Something in motion sent a searing pain across his stomach. He collapsed to the ground, falling to his side. Avalanche hung in the air, unwielded. Brannis's first thought was that he was unarmed, with a deadly foe at hand. His second was that it was likely too late already. He rolled to face the moonlight and looked down at his stomach. Blood was seeping through a rent in his armor, which was struggling to seal itself closed once more. The enchanted quicksilver damaged, but not beyond repair. Brannis wished he could say the same.
"If you want vengeance," Rakashi said, "I will understand. Of course, none is more deserving of your vengeance than Rashan Soloran, the one who decreed your death."
Rakashi lifted his half-spear overhead, ready to drive the blade through Brannis's weakened armor.
"No!"
The shriek of an anguished heart cried out. Rakashi twitched his blade to the side as a runed dagger flew at him with the force of a musket shot. The dagger glanced to the side, but another followed it. Taken from one of the dead brigands, it bore no runes. It shone like coal dust in the ether. Rakashi's one eye saw it, but he could not deflect it cleanly. The second dagger caught him hard in the shoulder, spraying blood before disappearing into the night. Rakashi set himself once more to strike, but he had not the time. Soria was on him in an instant, never having stopped her onrush to throw her daggers. Rakashi was beset, working his blade in a fury to keep Soria at bay.
"Soria, please do not make me..."
"Make you hurt me? You may as well have just killed me, you lying son of a whore!"
Soria gave no ground, pressing Rakashi backward into the uneven stream. Rakashi parried her blows like he would a sword, flashes at impact showing her shielding spell protecting her from his ruined blade.
"Let me explain. We do not have to do this," Rakashi said.
Soria paused in her futile attempt to break through Rakashi's expert defenses with her bare hands, She hopped, turned back, and grabbed Avalanche from where it hung.
Soria, no!
Rakashi's eyes went wide, and he turned to run. Brannis was no match for Rakashi in a foot race. Soria, on the other hand, Rakashi had no hope of escaping. Sped by ether and her Tejuan training to use it, she caught Rakashi after only a few steps. He turned and tried to dodge the blow, but like its namesake, there was nothing that could stop an avalanche that had you dead in its path. Rakashi's half-spear was driven down and through its owner as Soria cleaved him in half. She stood over him just a moment, the moment it took for the fact of his death to register in her mind.
Brannis!
She shouted, and ran to his side. Avalanche she let hang in the air near its latest victim. She looked down and saw the blood on Brannis' stomach.
How bad is it?
Bad. I don't know how bad.
Soria helped him off with his helm and enough of his armor to get the breastplate free. The sight beneath sent a chill through her. She was far from squeamish, but she knew the portent of dark blood pooling.
So? Brannis asked.
He was nauseous with pain, but hoped for news that could offer comfort.
I just killed the one who could answer best, but it's bad. I've got nothing for you to bite on, so just bear with me and hold still,
Soria said. Brannis did not like the sound of that, but closed his eyes and braced himself. He squeezed his fists tight and held them well away from his wound.
A searing pain blazed across his stomach as Soria pinched the gash closed
and sealed it with a bit of hurled fire. Brannis screamed, but it was over in just seconds. He moaned at the lingering agony of the burn. Soria tore a sleeve off her tunic and began dressing the wound.
I don't know how much that buys us, but some at least, Soria said.
Brannis closed his eyes and laid back.
Don't you leave me, Brannis,
Soria said. Eyes closed. He could still hear the tears in her voice.
Going to get help. It's all right,
Brannis tried to smile.
I hope you have a plan,
Soria whispered.
Tiba, Brannis managed to say.
Already working on that. I can be in two places at once, you know.
Emerald eyes snapped open in the darkness. Ether attuned, they sought a pair of daggers and snatched them free of their harness on the floor by the bedside. Bare feet set down on the floor. They would have stomped had they not realized the pressing need for silence. Even without enough ether to hold itself aloft, the starlit marauder was awash in runes to the point where it was as navigable in the ether as it was in the light. It also meant the walls were nearly as opaque. Kyrus would have been visible through the walls, but not Tiba. Juliana held freedom and adventure ready in hand as she opened the door of her cabin. As she emerged, she saw the door to Tiba's quarters open as well. Juliana cast a quick light spell in the hope of catching him off guard. Instead, all she got was a clear look at a furious Safshan blade priest.
What have you done?
Tiba shouted at her.
You killed me!
Only once, Juliana replied, holding her daggers at the ready. She swallowed back a lump in her throat. Tiba was a more formidable fighter than Rakashi, in full command of the ether.
This is your fault, all of it,
Tiba shouted at her, rune blade bared in Juliana's direction.
You insisted on keeping Brannis ignorant. Well, Rashan is not dead, and I am. You murdering liar! You swore you... He attacked me,
Tiba shouted over her.
You tricked him, Tiba,
Juliana screamed at him.
No politician's tricks here. You started that fight and you know it.
I had never thought to harm you, but I cannot live with being slaughtered by the likes of you.
The likes of me?
Juliana asked at the top of her lungs.
Weak, slovenly, arrogant, undisciplined. You always got by being the twin born with the source too strong for her world.
We'll see about that, won't we, blade priest? I plan to bury these blades in that honorless stone of a heart you've got.
A heart of stone? Me? The only reason I didn't kill Brannis in his sleep was honor. The only reason I waited was because you swore you would get him to kill Rashan, so that my people would be safe.
I was not willing to chance their fate on a lie.
Juliana flipped Adventure over in her hand,
taking an up-and-down pairing of the blades. Tiba recognized it as a signal that she was prepared to fight. Tiba rushed at her, taking advantage of the rune blade's reach in the cramped corridor and using it as a spear. Juliana gave no ground, using her blades to deflect the rune blade's tip time and again. She took a step forward, forcing Tiba back to maintain his reach on her. The rune blade was versatile, but was limited by the confined space. Juliana had no worry of slashes, blade reverses, kick sweeps, or many of the other tricks she had seen Rakashi use with a half-spear. A wind blew, though they felt nothing of the gentle air across their faces. The ship did, though, and shifted beneath their feet. Tiba steadied himself against the wall, taking one hand from his blade. Juliana turned her shoulder and fell roughly against it. When the wind passed, Tiba spared a glance over his shoulder, an oddity for him, since she knew he could see behind himself in the ether, and made his way for the stairs.
"Where do you think you're going?" Juliana shouted after him, letting him have a pace on her before following, in case he turned on her.
"To cut us loose," came the reply from above.
"You're insane! You'll drop the ship and us with it," Juliana said.
She was confident she could survive the fall, less confident that Tiba would, and not the least bit certain that the ship would be anything more than splinters.
"I am a dead man, do you not understand?" Tiba said, sounding more rational than any part of their shouted argument had been. "At any moment, Kairos will arrive to save you. I will die a pig's death, roasted on a spit."
Brennus's anger was a floundering, helpless thing.
"Kairos will..."
"He's not coming," Juliana interrupted. "I told him I would handle this."
Tiba turned his attention from the safety lines that secured the starlit marauder to its oaken berth, and back fully to Juliana. The deck was set at a slight angle, but there was room for that mighty rune blade of his to work through all its tricks. Tiba stalked across the deck, straight for her. Juliana was not the fighter that Soria was, but she was by far the sorceress. A bolt of pure ether shot forth from Juliana, catching Tiba by surprise. He tried to bring his rune blade to deflect the blast, but reacted too late. It slammed against Tiba's shielding spell, driving him back, stumbling. Tiba fell hard against the ship's rail, but kept hold of his rune blade.
"How did you kill Iridan if you can't even handle my magic?" Juliana taunted.
She was already drawing, waiting until she had more ether contained before she unleashed her next attack.
"You helped me kill him. You told me he panics and loses control. I made him panic."
"Got a plan for how to kill me?" Juliana asked.
Tiba pulled himself off the railing and approached,
keeping his blade ready in a defensive posture.
Tiba was ready with his blade when Juliana's next spell came for him. Black lightning sparked forth, caught on Tiba's rune blade, and clawed along its length, striking him despite a perfectly aligned defense. Smoke arose from his tunic sleeves, and Tiba grunted in pain.
"No," he admitted.
Tiba took two steps and leapt over the railing. Juliana gasped. For all his recent timidity, she had never known him to be fearful of heights.
His fear of dying before killing Brennus, that had to have been it.
He must have realized she would follow. She would have hated to disappoint him. Juliana bounded over the railing after him. She had been down only the previous day, and her memory of the larger branches on the way down played to her advantage. She saw Tiba in the ether, plummeting ahead of her, but he slowed himself each time he had to kick off against one of the street-sized offshoots, littering the path to the ground. Juliana continued to draw on the way down. The heart of Potawai Wood was a wellspring of ether, each tree with its own draconic source. She watched as she overtook Tiba, large branches delaying his fall. She landed on the ground with the force of a lighting sparrow, the cushioning spell for her landing costing just a tiny fraction of the ether she had stored. She saw Tiba fall, and timed his landing. The blade priest had barely touched the mossy ground when he was lifted from his feet by yet another arc of Juliana's black lightning. He flopped against an oversized root, and puddled to the forest floor, moaning.
It was the only sign besides the flicker of a still-burning source that told he was still alive.
Shielding spell intact, Juliana risked approaching him. The mighty warrior lay face down, struggling to rise.
She kicked the rune blade out of his enfeebled grasp.
Any last words? They're truly the last this time, unless you are triplet-born or something.
I love you, Soria,
Tebow whispered.
Then why did you cut my heart out?
She closed her eyes, not looking in either the ether or the light, as she hit him with a final ether bolt, one he was helpless to avoid. She heard a crunch as the blast struck Tiba's body and winced. She breathed deeply, calming herself. She had thought that the woody smell of Padawai might comfort her, but the smoky scent of Tiba's death overpowered it. Peeking down, she saw that the body was slowly sinking into the soft earth.
She scurried back, watching, rapt, as the forest itself consumed him. In but a moment, the ground sealed itself above the spot where Tebow once lay.
Juliana swallowed. The immediacy of the threat Tebow offered was gone, leaving her with nothing but worry for Brennus. There was little she could think to do, so that little was what she meant to try. She broke into a run in the direction of the Immortal's enclave.